Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast. And now your hosts, Ben Folks and Chad Dundas.
That's right. You're listening to another episode of the Co-Main Event Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Chad Dundas. That's Ben Folks. We're both longtime MMA journalists, and for almost the last 12 years, we've been meeting here every week to break down all the action in the wild, weird, and occasionally wonderful world of mixed martial arts. Ben, this weekend, we prepare to emerge from the doldrums of the end of the year MMA schedule. It's this sort of dead period where everything kind of shuts down between Christmas and New Year's that has become pretty common, I'd say, over the last decade or so in this sport. Like, obviously, it used to be that New Year's Eve was a pretty big night in MMA back in the days of Pride, and even in years past in the UFC, you would get these big star-studded gala events. But anymore, those have fallen by the wayside, so it's been a minute since we had a new UFC event to talk about. But that changes on Saturday with this Fight Night event from down there at the Apex in Las Vegas, headlined by Magomed Ankalaev versus Johnny Walker, a rematch of their fight from October that ended in a no contest after an illegal knee from Ankalaev in the first round. We hope to be able to talk about that card coming up later in the show, but first I wanted to ask you a question about scarcity.
Okay.
Because one product of the UFC schedule being as busy as it is, and some would say tedious at times during the year, you get one of these short breaks and it actually makes you a little hungrier for some fights. And I would say personally, I'm ready for a fight night this weekend. How about you?
Yeah, we've said this before, and I think that it holds true every time that we see it happen, maybe because we see it happen so seldom, that when there is a break of a couple weeks, you get kind of antsy. You're looking around being like, really? There's nobody's punching each other in the face in a cage that's also in like a glorified warehouse this weekend? What the hell, man? Especially a couple guys who maybe run a betting segment on some of their podcast properties. Looking around, I got $20 burning a hole in my pocket, Chad. I can't put it all down on FCS national championship games. I can't put all this money on English Premier League matches and weird cricket games that I don't understand. I got to have the MMA come back.
I guess this is also not just the first fight night of the year, but this is the first of our podcasts, of our free podcasts, I should say, of 2024, just because of the way that Christmas and New Year's broke down this year. So I'm just going to ask you, man, do you have any hopes and dreams for 2024 in MMA?
You know, I have a few. For one thing, I'm still hoping and dreaming that UFC 300 is going to end up being the blockbuster event that we've been told.
Yeah.
I am even hoping and dreaming a little bit that Conor McGregor's return feels like, you know, a big time, another Conor McGregor event. We've been missing that. We've been missing that energy. I'll be interested to see how that one goes. Also, Chad, if I can be real with you, I'm going to continue to hope and dream that Francis Ngannou actually fights in the PFL and that his opponent gets that $2 million.
Yeah, it'd be great for his opponent to get that $2 million, especially in MMA where that $2 million is not easy to come by. I agree with all of your takes of all of your hopes and dreams. I hope we get John Jones versus Stipe Miocic on the books. And may I go a step further to say that I hope that the winner of that fight might even fight Tom Aspinall for the undisputed heavyweight title.
You're really holding on to the John Jones Stipe thing.
It seems like the UFC is holding on to it.
Okay, that's what I want to, though, separate. Like, is it because Dana White keeps stubbornly insisting this must be the fight, we're not going to move on to something else when John Jones is healthy? Or is it because you, Chad Dundas, really want to see it?
I mean, I don't necessarily care to see it, except for that I think it's going to be, or hopefully it will be, a test for John Jones at heavyweight that lasts longer than however he took to dispatch Ciryl Gane in the first round, because I still don't think we have a ton of intel about how John Jones is going to do at heavyweight. Now, if you told me that we were just going to lock Stipe Miocic out in the cold and that he was going to leapfrog him and John Jones was just going to go ahead and fight Tom Aspinall, I'm not sure I would have a big problem with that, except for the fact that Stipe seems like he's been cooling his heels, waiting around to make this John Jones money. So that would be kind of a raw deal for him. As I've said before, I don't know if I said it on here or if I said it on the Patreon properties, but look, if John Jones is going to be out trying to rehab the pec, he's out here trying to rehab the torn pec muscle, we should just have Stipe and Tom Aspinall fight for the interim title.
Again, trying to get Stipe killed.
And then we just have the winner of that fight, John. You got to do something with Stipe, unless we're just going to say so long and thanks for all the memories. You can go fight fires in Cleveland now.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. It feels like you have something against Stipe, that you want to see him get a hole punched in his face by a young buck like Tom Aspinall.
Everyone knows that I love Stipe more than the average man. I love everything he stands for. I love everything about him. I love how his voice sounds like a blender full of lug nuts after fights when you try to interview him. He's one of the great stewards of the sport. If he was okay with it, and maybe he would be, I don't know. I mean, if Stipe Miocic was okay with just walking away right now without fighting any of these guys, I would say, sure, go ahead, have John Jones fight Tom Aspinall. It just doesn't seem like that's where we're headed. It seems like the UFC is holding on to the Jones-Stipe fight. It seems like it's the one Jones is talking about the most. And, you know, Stipe Miocic is generally cool with whatever. So, yeah, it seems like we're still going to have it. I hope we get it on the books, is all I'm saying.
Okay, I'll go along with it insofar as I'll say John Jones versus a legit heavyweight. That is a hope and dream that I have for 2024.
Yeah, no, I agree. Okay, here's what we're going to do this week, just because this is our first show since December 18th, and we've had some listener mail pile up. We intend to take most of the show to go through those and give them the attention they so deserve. And then toward the end of the show, if we have some time left, we'll break off from that, and we will spend a little bit of that time talking about this week's upcoming fight card, Ankalaev versus Johnny Walker, the rematch we've all been waiting for. Sound good, Ben?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Remember, you're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast proper. This show drops every Monday afternoon for free in your timelines and your podcast libraries. But if you're not satisfied by this, friends, if you're not sated, if you find yourself pining for more of that hot CME action, well, you can find myself, Ben Folks, and all the other Lil Co-Maniacs over on Patreon almost all week long. You can hit us up at patreon.com/co-main-event and get loads, absolute loads, I say, of extra audio and video content, as well as access to our official Discord message board. The coolest people in MMA are constantly chatting it up over there on any number of topics. And the only rule on the message board, no assholes. Ben, you and I were out in Seattle over the weekend, over the New Year's Eve weekend, and we got the chance to catch up with a handful of the patrons of the Co-Main Event Podcast. And it was yet another reminder that, if I may be so bold, sir, I will say we've got the best community in mixed martial arts.
Absolutely, we do. And just a diverse community of people from all walks of life with a lot of interesting life experiences. You know, you get a bunch of CME people together, somebody's going to know something about damn near everything. We got somebody going to know something about Navy planes. Somebody else going to run a jiu-jitsu school. You know, we're just, it's an eclectic blend. Moves to the beat of jazz, I would say.
Yeah. Another thing that's going to happen is that two patrons are going to talk you into getting super into sumo wrestling in 2024. And that's something we're going to do over on the Patreon. We're going to get super into the sumo. So run, check us out over there. If it sounds good, but you're not sure, right now we're offering 7-day free trials at our $5 tier. You can jump on board absolutely for free and check out all the content happening over there. Take a look. Decide if it's something you want to take the plunge on, and then you can join up for real. Everybody knows by now, this show is a completely independent podcast. We don't have the backing of a big parent company or even one of the MMA websites that you've heard about. We're just two guys talking into microphones, and we've been doing it for over a decade. But the truth is, we can only keep making the show with your support. Help keep the CME alive by joining up to become part of the awesome community over at patreon.com/comainevent. You know what else you could do if you want to support the show, Ben?
What's that, John?
You could buy some of our merchandise over at our shop at comainevent.com. Just go to that website and click the link at the top of the page that says shop, and that'll get you over there. You can buy all the stuff over there. You can get the Volcamania t-shirt. You can get the Bobby Knuckles t-shirt. You can get the Are You Fucking Kidding Me t-shirt. You can get the Dundasso t-shirt. You can get the Daddest Man on the Planet coffee mugs. You can get t-shirts, hats, hoodies. I think you can get a towel. I think you can get a towel and a tote bag over there if you want to at the shop. As always, we partner with our guys at Superconductor. They're a brand and design studio from Portland, Oregon. We can't recommend them highly enough for all your design needs. Hit them up at studiosuperconductor.com or on Instagram at Studio Superconductor.
You know, a lot of circles, the towel and tote bag, they call that the Chad Dundas combo.
Yeah, that's the special right there. Mm-hmm. You know what that tells you? That you're going, everyone knows you're a laid back dude, but you still got your shit together because you're keeping it in your tote.
Towel and a tote bag headed to the beach.
All right, let's get into some of this listener mail. But first, we got a new sponsor for the show this week, and this is one that is near and dear to our hearts, because today we've got a fictional short story by longtime listener to the show, Jamie Court. He's a patron, actually, of the show and a resident of the fictional country of Ireland. His book, A Puppet Scorned, sounds fascinating, to be honest. It's a darkly comic tale of two puppets having weird erotic knitting sex that goes wrong. And, you know, let's face it, we've all been there. Yeah, we've all had that happen a time or two.
Just a Saturday night.
The result is a monstrous baby and a revenge you'll never see coming. I can almost guarantee you've never read anything quite like this before.
Yeah, I'd say that's a solid bet, Jed. It's body horror with sock puppets, monster horror with sock puppets, erotic horror with sock puppets. Mm-hmm. You get to find out how sock puppets make babies. Yeah. You get some incredible fabric-based insults. You get puns woven into a yarn that is twisted, funny, and weirdly disturbing.
See, I see what you did there.
Yeah.
I see what you did. Jamie says he thinks of the story as a Tim Burton animated film if he was high on tramadol and hallucinating.
Cool.
But you don't have to take our word for it. A Puppet Scorned won a 666 award for best short story as voted by readers of the platform Godless and other underground horror fans. Godless is a platform that specializes in underground and independent horror and bizarro fiction. You can buy A Puppet Scorned from godless.com or head over and get it from Amazon for 99 cents, for God's sakes. Less than a dollar.
Yeah.
Hardly even money. And if you get it straight from Godless because you like to support the not evil billionaires, you just email the book file to your Kindle or whatever app you use. It's easy. Look, you guys, do a solid for another one of the co-maniacs. Get out there and buy Jamie's story. In addition to that, you can find Jamie Court on Instagram and TikTok at Horror Bong, all one word. Horror Bong.
Horror Bong.
Horror Bong. That tells you a little something, I think, about what you're getting into there. That's the most unique ad read we've ever done on the scene. We've been doing this almost a dozen years, and nothing holds a candle to a puppet scorned, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you keep your Manscaped ads. You know, no thank you. I'm all for us continuing to do ads for members of the co-main event listening audience and their delightfully weird personal projects.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we're going to get into these messages. Obviously, I think the biggest news of the new year, which just happened this week, was the confirmation that Francis Ngannou was going to fight Anthony Joshua in a big money boxing match, once again going over there to Saudi Arabia. So obviously, we got a bunch of questions about that. So we're going to do this in two parts. I'm going to read these first two questions that I think kind of go together, and then we'll get into this second one here that I think puts us off in a slightly different direction. But the first one here is from our guy, Dan Alexander, who writes, I can't believe how warm and fuzzy I feel hearing that Francis has again struck gold. Although Anthony Joshua is a Brit, for the record, there's no such thing as a British accent, I'll be rooting for Francis. His story just keeps getting better and better. It's nice when good things happen to the good guys. Hashtag fuck you, Dana. Please discourse. And then I'll add this one on there from Mr. JM, who writes, why does Francis Ngannou keep fumbling the bag? And I would just say he's fumbling the bag because he's carrying so many of them.
Yeah.
He's absolutely loaded down with the bag right now. So you can't help but have a few coins get fumbled trailing along behind him like scraps because he's making so much goddamn money out here.
And you know, I love how much most MMA fans seem to love it, that just when we hear there's a fight announcement, we don't ask that he wins these fights. We would like him to acquit himself well, to represent MMA well. He represented MMA way better than any of us expected against Tyson Fury. But honestly, everybody is just happy to see him getting those fights and getting the payday. And he could go in there, turn in another good performance, lose another decision against Anthony Joshua, and be probably the best paid and most popular 0-2 boxer of all time.
I mean, frankly, even if he went out there and got knocked out in the first round, it would still be a success story for Francis Ngannou in most ways, because he's still, you know, even if he does a bad job, they got to give him that money. So he's still going to get paid for it. Now, obviously, that takes a lot of air out of the legend of Francis Ngannou. But at the same time, you know, he's in a sense already won this. It seems to me, especially if he wins and can keep going in boxing, that he has pulled off the most successful UFC contract negotiation, or lack of negotiation, as the case may be, in the history of the company. Now, we don't fully know how much money Conor McGregor actually got for fighting Floyd Mayweather back in the day. There were a lot of numbers kicked around. I don't know that any of them are accurate, especially
since the UFC took their cut.
Especially since he had to slip some of that money to the UFC. The UFC stuck its beak in there. But I, you know, I'll tell you, by the time Francis gets done with this boxing shit, I think he will have made more money than Conor McGregor did for the Floyd Mayweather fight. That's my guess. And I don't know, man, you just got to sit back and marvel, I think, at what the guy has pulled off here.
Okay. I do think though, that this second one is going to feel a little bit more like a litmus test, because he outperformed our expectations so much in the Tyson Fury one. Remember, going into that one, we were like, please just don't get embarrassed. If you do anything better than that, we'll call it a win. He goes out there, drops Tyson Fury, is at least arguably deserving of a decision. You could at least debate it a little bit. There's a moment where we're standing there reading the scores and you genuinely don't know how it's going to go. None of that was anything we were expecting. And so we all come out of that riding high despite the loss. You go into this one, and I think there's going to be a part of all of us that's sort of like, was Tyson Fury just off? Did Francis Ngannou just have a moment? Can he really do this against legit boxers, or was it just lighting it in a bottle? And this is the one that I think, because if he goes in there and turns in another good performance, win or lose, then everybody will kind of have to be like, okay, Francis can fucking box, man. Francis can box with these heavyweights.
Yeah, this one feels, at least in the scope of the career, almost more important, because you got to go out there and prove that the first one wasn't a fluke. And I feel like the response to the original announcement that I saw on Twitter, props to Ariel Helwani, by the way, for once again breaking the biggest news in the sport. But you start scrolling through the comments, the replies. First of all, the replies were almost all positive. And I don't know if that's just because the Zuffa zombies have learned to shut the fuck up when it comes to Francis Ngannou, but there's most people cheering for him. But there was also a bunch of people in those replies really early on that was like, Francis will knock this guy out in the first round. Whoa. And I was just like, wow.
That's...
Maybe we are getting a little bit ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
Maybe we should pump the brakes just a little bit there. But I think, you know, it goes to show, first of all, we're getting, you know, MMA fans. What have you done for me lately? The last thing you saw is the greatest thing of all time. And so now we expect Francis Ngannou to basically go out there and be Muhammad Ali. But it just shows, like, you know, how the pendulum has swung back in Francis Ngannou's favor. And I do agree with you that we could be overestimating shit at this point. But this is more interesting, right? This fight is more interesting now than the Tyson Fury fight at the beginning. Because before the Tyson Fury fight, you're right, we were like, dude, just don't get embarrassed. Now we're heading into this Anthony Joshua fight being like, but what if he wins, though?
Yeah. I mean, this knock him out in the first round stuff, I get it. We're all excited. We all love to get enthusiastic when we get a little bit ahead of steam. Let's just temper our expectations just a little bit, though. Just a little bit. We don't need to... set the bar too high for Big Fran, because it is still the man's second professional boxing match.
Yeah. All right. Next question this week comes from Ricky the Dancing Dog.
Okay.
And he writes, I think I can see what the MMA gods have planned. Francis Ngannou beats Anthony Joshua in a boxing match. His greatness is hailed from all quarters. The haters grow, if not silence, in this is the internet, quieter. The hate is now a squeak rather than a roar. He's a man who has made the world believe. Next fight, triumphant, he returns to MMA, and he loses to Timothy Johnson.
Or someone like
Timothy Johnson. Now, this is something that the MMA gods would do. But at the same time, I think it brings up a valid point, and that was Francis was on the MMA Hour today, and Ariel asked him about the PFL, and he still sounded rather bullish about it. He was like, I talked to the guys from the PFL when I got this offer for Anthony Joshua. Now I assume that conversation was, I'm doing this.
Yeah.
That was the conversation to be had with the PFL. But at the same time, he still considers himself to be business partners with the PFL, and it sounds like he is still planning on returning at some point to fight in MMA, to which I say, honestly, should he, though?
Yeah. I mean, maybe it'll depend how this fight goes to some extent. But, you know, I saw his comments on the MMA Hour, and one thing that I thought was interesting was that he said he had to talk to the PFL about it because he's in business with them, but was telling them basically, you're right, that it sounded like he was saying, this is what I'm doing, and we just wanted you guys to know where I'm going to be at. I'm going to be in Saudi Arabia fighting Anthony Joshua. And he said the PFL response was, well, yeah, we couldn't stand in the way of an opportunity like this for you, which, granted, they might not have contractually the ability to stand in the way of him if they wanted to. They also would have to realize, you got a lot of goodwill going with Francis and with how you're treating Francis in contrast to how the UFC treated him. You don't want to squander that by you trying to stop him from doing this. And then imagine if he's on the MMA Hour being like, the PFL won't let me chase my boxing dream. Like, that would be disastrous for you. So you got it. You kind of have to say that. It's also impossible to imagine the UFC saying that. We couldn't stand in the way of this. UFC would love to stand. The UFC will be down at the courthouse filing papers to stand in the way of your opportunity, unless they get to wet the beak right away. So, there is a difference there. But also, you know, Ariel noted, I think, that he had talked to the PFL and that they were saying, we're confident Francis is going to fight for us sometime in 2024. And Francis gets on there and Ariel's like, are you going to fight in 2024? And he's like, kind of like, we'll see. You know, here we are, January 2024. We'll see how things shake out, which strikes me as an honest answer from Francis Ngannou.
Yeah.
Because you don't know.
If he keeps winning and he keeps getting offered these big money boxing matches, he'd be a fool to come back to MMA, frankly.
Yeah, except that, I do think, I mean, if he goes out there and he knocks out Anthony Joshua in the first round, then yeah, sure. We're going to see a big offer on the table next in the PFL thing. Let's say he goes out there and loses another decision. Let's say, just for the sake of argument, this one feels less close, that there's no debate about who won. But still, he didn't get embarrassed. He, you know, he ends up being the most well-paid, most popular 0-2 boxer of all time. And there's no immediate opportunity to turn around and do a boxing match. I could see the argument being to come back for the PFL being essentially like, don't let them forget that you do this too. And that kind of like we've said about Conor McGregor over the years, if new fans are tuning in because they hear how popular they are, but when they tune in, all they see is you losing, at some point they're going to be like, wait, why was this dude a big deal? Why did I hear about this guy? Like, they're going to need to see you win one. Timothy Johnson, I don't know if that's the guy you pick for him to come back and fight in the PFL, but I could see the argument for Big Fran being like, okay, let me go straight up murk somebody in the PFL just to remind you that this is really where I came from, was the world of MMA, and then I can go back and do some boxing matches in the future.
Yeah. I think, honestly, since he's already had such a good performance against Tyson Fury, even if he loses to Anthony Joshua, I think he remains a viable star in MMA. Obviously, the haters will crow about how the Tyson Fury fight was a fluke, but now that we have seen him perform so well in that match, I think that there is, you know, at least among right-thinking people, an acknowledgement that he's actually very, very good at this shit, if you didn't know that already. And I think him coming back to MMA, even after a loss to Anthony Joshua, would still be viable for him. I'm just saying, 37-year-old man, I think it was the right move for him to go out and get that money in boxing to begin with. And if he decided he didn't want to come back to MMA after that, I would understand. All right, next question this week comes to us from Scott, who writes, so the UFC announced Dustin Poirier versus Benoit St. Denis at UFC 299 as the co-main event and a five-round scrap. Let's give some props to Dustin for two reasons. One, he's taking a fight outside the logjam of top guys at lightweight. Number two, fighting St. Benoit. Is it St. Denis or St. Benoit? Is it St. Benoit? St. Benoit, right?
I think St. Benoit. Okay. But
well, no, it's Saint. Hold on,
Benoit Saint Denis.
It's been Saint Denis. So see, I got tripped up here because it says Saint Benoit in the listener mail question.
It does.
So it made me seem like I was losing my mind for a second. Anyway, that's one of the scariest fights that I can imagine, as the quote God of War has really pounded everyone he's fought so far. Thoughts on this matchup? First of all, I'm surprised you get this one at 299, because with Dana White. With Dana White's mouth writing checks about how good UFC 300 is going to be, if you told me this fight was going to be on the main card of UFC 300, I'd be like, now we're starting to make some sense here with the promises that he has made. But I guess you can't just give all the other pay-per-views short shrift to put everything up on 300. So that surprises me that you're at 299 instead of 300 with this matchup. And I agree, man, you got to give props to Dustin Poirier for being, frankly, maybe the first of these top lightweights to be like, all right, fine, I will fight an up-and-comer instead of just continuing the round-robin tournament of like the same four guys who have been at the top of the lightweight division for the last handful of years. So I think that is good on him, and frankly, not surprising. Of course it's going to be Dustin Poirier who takes the chance because of his gameness, his innate gameness. He's going to do that. But it's a great fight. Props to Dustin for taking it, and that's one you want to be in your seats for.
Yeah, you know what? I was a little surprised that Dustin Poirier would take this one. I mean, maybe he feels like he's been out of action a long time, and there's a lot of reasons that you can think of for him not to take a fight like this. But for Benoit St. Denis, this is a big, big, big opportunity to get a fight against Dustin Poirier like this, because you win against Dustin Poirier and you are a guy. You are a capital G guy immediately and overnight. And the problem that we've talked about with that so many people face, especially in a division like lightweight, where it's so crowded, just talent-wise, but also where you have a few top names trying to get into that top name category is so hard, because you kind of need one of those guys to fight you. And all those guys are sort of looking up at, how do I get back to a title shot? And to get just the opportunity seems like so much of the battle here. I was also surprised to see that one land on UFC 299, but as we'll maybe talk about later, when I saw, Oliveira Chucky Olives, our boy, being booked for UFC 300. That's when I started to think. I've maintained that we're going to be able to know some of what the plans are for UFC 300 by seeing what some of the undercard is, because whatever we're planning on being the big driver of pay-per-views, we're probably going to want some backups on the same card.
Yeah.
Those guys.
Sarukian Oliveira kind of makes it look like you're angling for Makhachev and Gaethje, right?
Yeah, like you're looking at a lightweight title fight on there, and you want to have some top lightweights in case that one falls out so that you can have somebody to call on who's already preparing for that date. But yeah, I had the same thought of saying, like, man, if I guess you feel like you got so much planned and so much loaded up for UFC 300 that you don't even need Dustin Poirier. That's hard to imagine because, as we talked about, I think last week on one of our Patreon properties, Dustin Poirier versus anyone right now feels like a big fight. Feels like the kind of thing that draws a whole lot of eyeballs.
Yeah, it does. And then you got, as you said, Benoit St. Denis getting a big opportunity. He is on a 5-fight win streak after losing his UFC debut to Easy Dos Santos back in October of 2021. And they have all been stoppages. So that's impressive. I guess on the same note of what you were just saying, if we're going to give props to Dustin Poirier for taking this fight against an up-and-comer, you got to give props also to Chucky Olives for taking a fight against Armand Sarukian in the same vein. You got two veterans here fighting two real dangerous emerging stars. And so that, you gotta give those guys the credit that they deserve for taking those fights. I was surprised to see the big homie Aaron Bronstetter over here tweeting that opening lines for these fights, at least according to an early odds maker here from betonline.ag, has both Chucky Olives and Dustin Poirier as slight underdogs in these fights.
I mean, we're looking toward the future, perhaps.
Yeah.
We're thinking maybe that their time is done. And yet, we've seen a few other people in these similar situations. I mean, honestly, didn't we see Justin Gaethje in this situation when he fought Rafael Fiziev, where it seemed, I think he went in, or at least at some point when the lines open, was a betting underdog. And it seemed like maybe the UFC was thinking, has Justin Gaethje entered stepping stone territory? Yeah. And I think, honestly, it shows you people who really can master the longevity part of the MMA puzzle is when they get put in those kind of moments and they go, nope. Not yet. How many times have we seen Max Holloway do it? They've been trying to use Max Holloway to propel other people's careers for years now. And Max Holloway's just like, nope.
No, he will not do it. Next question this week comes to us from Peter Andrew Beardsley, MBE. So
what does MBE stand for?
You'd have to Google that one. Sounds like something from overseas. This refers to a conversation we had before about the possibility of Paddy Pimblett versus Conor McGregor and whether or not that would be a big or viable fight. I think we both agreed that it would be a big fight, but we both said at the time it would seems like a fight that would be hard to get Conor McGregor to agree to. So here is Peter Andrew Beardsley, MBE's response. Now, this came
English
in before.
English football coach, by the way. Peter Andrew Beardsley, MBE.
Great to hear from him. This, in fairness, this email came in before Conor McGregor's amazing video of him at dinner on New Year's Eve, sipping his wine and saying he was going to fight Michael Chandler before cackling like Lex Luthor or some other supervillain. So take that for what it's worth. But Peter Andrew Beardsley, MBE, English football coach, writes, I think there's a way to get Conor to agree to fight Paddy that you gentlemen missed. You book it at Anfield. Paddy's from Liverpool. It's a short hop over the water from Dublin. Liverpool have a big Irish fan base, including Conor himself, and people from Ireland regularly go over from Ireland to Liverpool games. If Conor can't get his Croke Park show, Anfield is the next best thing. So it's an easier fight. He can make money and headline a summer show at a stadium in front of 55,000 odd people. That's the sell. Now, I can tell from context that Anfield is the stadium in Liverpool.
Look at you.
As an American, I was able to divine that from the context of this email.
An astute question. I can see now why Peter Beardsley was awarded the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire, also known as MBE.
Okay, yeah.
I can also see why that somebody thought it was a good idea to have a video game in 1988 entitled Peter Beardsley's International Football. Sure, we all played that for the Nintendo, right?
1988?
1988. And let me tell you something. It's worth looking at the Wikipedia page for this video game just to see the cover art alone, because it reminds you, oh yeah, that is what we were doing with video games back then. This was on the Commodore 64, where you could find that one.
Commodore 64.
Mm-hmm. You know, maybe I just don't have my finger on the Conor McGregor pulse these days, but I haven't even heard him bring up the Croke Park thing in a long time, right? Like,
yeah, he hasn't talked about
even
it for a while.
Even he seems to have let that one
mind,
go.
His mind has been elsewhere, let's say.
That's entirely possible. It does seem, I mean, like, if you were to book a Conor McGregor, Paddy Pimblett fight, I feel like I could get behind it in a way, because I'd be like, all right, two dudes who are trying a similar kind of approach to MMA stardom has worked much, much better for one of them than for the other one. But also, two dudes where right now I could easily see them in the kind of fight where it's not really about anything. It's not about the usual stuff of rankings and titles and things like that. You don't even need that for something like this. He's just, Conor McGregor's at the point where you don't necessarily need it to sell in the fight. Paddy Pimblett's kind of at that point, because it's like, we're not really trying to move Paddy Pimblett up the rankings with any great speed at this point by the UFC. They're just kind of looking for some fights that Paddy Pimblett could possibly win. And you put him in here against Conor McGregor, and it's just kind of like, all right, let these two have at each other in a series of, like, you know, media events and press conferences and whatnot, and then have them do a fight where the whole point, we're not going to even ask any questions about the stakes of the fight. The stakes of the fight is just like, well, Conor McGregor can't fucking lose to Paddy Pimblett, because that'd be bad.
Yeah,
you know,
that'd be real bad.
And Paddy Pimblett has a chance to be like, oh no, like, I am actually good. Fuck what you heard. I can beat Conor McGregor, and it's a huge win for him. So, like, it kind of works for everybody, I think, if you could get Conor McGregor to agree to it.
I mean, hey, if you told me that these two guys were going to fight at Anfield, which I've been able to divine from context is the stadium in Liverpool.
There you go.
I think that sounds awesome. I think that is amazing. And I don't know that it's realistic, just because I don't think you could get Conor McGregor to take the fight. I also don't know whether the UFC even has its mind in that direction right now. You know, I think that they are cool with pulling off big, high profile, record breaking events as long as they can make it fit within their budget. So in that regard, they might be interested in doing it, but they're just making so much money staying home at the Apex and, you know, going out on the road for relatively cut and paste pay-per-views, at least in terms of like production values, that would they even want to do this? I don't know. I think that the best way to get him to do it would be to tell Dana White you didn't think he could do it.
There you go. The media says, like, you can't do it.
Yeah.
They're like, there's no way you could pull off an event at Anfield, which through context clues, Chad Dundas has figured out is in Liverpool.
Yeah. Where are you going to put the cage? Where are you going to do that? It's impossible, Dana. We don't believe you could do it. And then he'd be like, we're going to blow everybody's minds. We're going to Anfield, which Chad Dundas knows is the stadium in Liverpool.
The woke mob said Dana White couldn't do it.
All right. Next question this week comes to us from Thomas Cruz, Mapother the Fourth, which, that's Tom Cruise's real name.
Wow. You're blowing my mind right now.
Did you know that?
First of all, you're telling me his real middle name is Cruz, Thomas Cruz. I can understand, though, why he decided to go with that rather than Tom Mapover.
Yeah, Tom Mapover doesn't necessarily sound like a guy who would be in a series of blockbuster franchise movies. So maybe he made the right choice there. Anyway, he writes, Jorge says he is, quote, unretired now. Would a matchup with Tony Ferguson have parity? Please discourse. All right. Look, let's stop trying to book fights for Tony Ferguson. Okay? I mean, if you're going to book one, maybe have him fight Jorge Masvidal in a fight of old guys who might not hurt each other that bad. But let's not do it. Let's just not even put that idea out into the universe for fear that it will take hold. Let's just not do that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that if we're gonna do anything, let's have him fight a peer in one way or another. But also, like, I do think at this point it is irresponsible of us, the MMA public, to even be suggesting ideas. Because maybe if we don't say anything, then nobody will say anything. And we can just kind of let it fade out a little bit. Like, we don't need to be suggesting ideas. Because, you know, Tony Ferguson, it's not going to take much for him to decide that that's a good idea. He can be in there and doing his hell week, getting ready for it, as soon as you mention it.
Yeah.
Maybe we just don't talk about it.
No, that's what I'm saying. Let's just let it drop. Now, we talked about this last week over on the Patreon, but Jorge Masvidal unretiring with a one-word tweet that just says unretired is both totally an MMA thing to do. It is obviously how an MMA retirement should end. And at the same time, we don't know what it means. We don't know what that means at all. We don't know if he is returning to MMA to fight in the UFC. We don't know what his contract situation is. We don't know if he is announcing that he's just going to come bare knuckle box at Game Bread FC, or if he's going to do something else, or if he's a free agent who could go to the PFL. We have no idea. So until we get a little bit of further clarification, first of all, if he's even actually retired or unretired, we don't know, which is one word tweet on New Year's Day. We don't know what to expect until we find out a little bit more.
Yeah, I still maintain that the most likely explanation for the unretired tweet is that Jorge looked at the money he spent on his own fight promotion and decided he needed to get back in there. He learned perhaps the lesson that a lot of people have learned, which is the great way to make a small fortune in fight promotion is to start with a large fortune.
Yeah.
Know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
When you say that. The next question this week comes to us from Eric in Toronto, who writes, "Season's greetings." Thanks, Eric. "Seems like hashtag ain't shit going on, so can we take a minute to appreciate referee Jason Herzog?
Okay.
I was rewatching the Irene Aldana versus Carol Rosa fight. Okay. And despite the myriad of reasons I should be focused on the competitors, my eyes kept being drawn to Herzog. Doing his sideways gorilla walk, keeping himself constantly in the perfect position, and looking like he's trying to activate a zoom function in his eyeballs so he doesn't miss a second of the action. I don't know if Jay Herz, okay, I like it,
nope,
is the best ref in MMA, but he's sure trying. You don't like Jay Herz? You against nope. that?
No, I don't like it. We don't need it. But I do agree that he probably is the best ref in MMA. Just a consummate professional out there, you know, even in situations where we've seen him have to deal with the tricky stuff that could come up in a fight, he always seems like he's in control, which can be tough to do because sometimes shit is going to happen in an MMA fight where, like, nobody seems sure what's supposed to happen. And often the thing everybody leans on is just try to get the fight restarted as soon as possible so that we don't dwell on the uncertainty of what's supposed to happen. I've yet to see a moment that I can remember where Jason Herzog is working a fight and he doesn't seem completely calm, competent, and in control, like he absolutely knows and can clearly communicate to everybody what needs to happen and what the rules say and what's going on. And you can't think of a whole lot of fights that he's fucked up either, which anybody who works a whole bunch of fights, it's going to happen sooner or later, but he always seems like he's doing a good job. And he's not flashy, you know? Jason Herzog's not out here drawing attention to himself, just a competent professional, a man all about his craft. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Herb Dean won Referee of the Year at the World MMA Awards this year. Not that we want to give a fan-voted awards ceremony that much credit, but, you know, probably should have been Jay Herz.
I mean, that one I wouldn't give a whole lot of credence just because it's fans are showing up to vote on like a few categories or whatever. And the referee one comes down to like, what referee have I heard of? You know, that's what they're voting on. The thing that I think is interesting is when we worked for The Athletic and we did that fighter survey and asking the fighters who they thought the best and worst ref was. And it was either they didn't have much of an opinion or they had somebody they absolutely fucking hated. There wasn't a whole lot of middle ground, but I recall a lot of people saying positive stuff about Jason Herzog. And basically them saying like that the thing that they liked about Jason Herzog was that you didn't have to think about it too much. That when Jason Herzog was your referee, it was not an issue the way that people had their sort of hang-ups about other refs.
Yeah, I was surprised. I was going to bring this up too, because Jason Herzog far and away was the guy that the fighters had the most possible positive things to say about. I was also surprised how many fighters just didn't know who the refs were. It reminded me that we watch the sport in a different way than a lot of them do, because we know who all the refs are. And I talked to a couple fighters who had to be like, you know, that skinny guy with the dark hair, that dude. And I was like, Jason Herzog? And they'd be like, yes, that guy. He's good. Yeah. I like that guy.
Well, see, I found that answer was way more common for when you ask them who the best ref is. When you ask them who the worst ref is, then
they know. They know that one.
They had somebody in their mind. And it was usually because he stopped a fight on me early when I was still in it, whatever. You know, it was like, but everybody had somebody where they were like, I have some bad feelings toward this guy still.
Next question this week comes to us from Taylor Loyal, who writes, an interesting thing happened in the rankings following UFC 296. Colby Covington dropped a couple of spots to number 5, and Stephen Thompson retained his spot at number 6. As they are coming off losses, there has been some speculation about what's next for both of them. How about each other, despite their ages, and can still draw a crowd? Sure, why not? I believe both Stephen Thompson and Colby Covington have reached sure, why not territory in their careers. So, yeah.
The thing that I both like and don't like about this matchup is, what would Colby Covington do with Stephen Thompson as the guy across from him? Because we know Colby Covington's shtick at this point, that he wants to go out there draped in Trump gear and talking a whole bunch of shit, making up a dumb nickname for his opponent, and saying the most vile and worst and yet not at all clever things about that person. What do you say about Stephen Thompson? What do you even do there? See, that's the thing, is you'd be like, I wonder what awful fucking thing Colby Covington would come up with and how much people would just roll their eyes and hate him for it. And yet he would have to do something, right? And then the other side of me goes, but wouldn't our humanity be better served by not finding out? Wouldn't we just be, our souls would be a little lighter not knowing what it is Colby Covington would say about Stephen Thompson?
It would also be interesting to see how Stephen Thompson reacted to someone who perhaps said vile things about him. I think, would he just be like, ha ha, this Colby guy is crazy, man. I like him. I like his style, man. He just says whatever. It's crazy.
At worst, he's going to pray for him. You know, like the maddest he would get would be like, you know, I'm going to pray for the guy, because he's clearly, he's got some darkness in his heart that he's dealing with. As far as the actual matchup, I could see like, yeah, sure, whatever. Like it would make some degree of sense for them to fight each other. And I would say before, hey, Colby Covington's pressure wrestling based game would be kind of kryptonite for Stephen Thompson. And yet we saw not a whole lot of that pressure based wrestling game against Leon Edwards. So who knows if Colby Covington could go out there and still do it.
Yeah.
Maybe Stephen Thompson karate-size his ass. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know, spinning kick knockout for Stephen Thompson is not something that I would argue about.
I mean, if Stephen Thompson were to spinning kick karate shit Colby Covington into the land of wind and ghost, he instantly becomes a hero, an MMA icon. They induct him into the Hall of Fame before he can make it to the locker room. You know what I'm saying?
I agree. Next question this week comes to us from Ronnie Rosenthal, who writes, a fat, roided to the gills Michael Chandler is a top 10 heavyweight. Yes or no?
What's going on, Ronnie? What's going on at home? That this is the question that you're sitting around, you're speculating on the great what ifs of this sport, a sport which, you know, it lends itself to some speculation. And then Israeli former soccer player Ronnie Rosenthal is going to roll up in here and be like, okay, but what if Michael Chandler got insanely juiced and rolled in here at like 240, 250 pounds? I mean, I think that it would be unhealthy for Mike. Yeah. I don't think that his frame is made to carry all that weight. And I think might slow him down, might lose a little bit of the explosive power that Michael Chandler's known for.
Yeah, I don't. Perhaps this is a response to the suggestion by Conor McGregor in his amazing video that he and Michael Chandler would fight at 185 pounds. I don't know. Either that or maybe Ronnie Rosenthal had been into the gummies.
Or we're just talking shit about the heavyweight division in general.
That, I mean, which is always possible. It's always possible.
And always fun.
Let's not forget that Michael Chandler is 5'8". So as roided up and swole as he was able to get, he would probably still have some physical deficiencies against some of the bigger heavyweights. Also, if you've been watching this sport since its beginning, since its genesis, we have seen roided up 5'8" dudes fight in the heavyweight division before. So that would not be unprecedented. And you will note, very few of them are still hanging around.
I would love it if he's just suddenly showed up 250 pounds, obviously roided out of his fucking mind, and just insisted that, you know, you get older and your body changes. And they just did not even address it, really. It was just sort of like, what? Yeah, no, I mean, like, the weight cut just was getting me. I was cutting a lot of weight, honestly, guys. You maybe don't know how much weight I was cutting. And you just kind of get sick of it. And at a certain age, you just, you know, you let your body be what's going to be. And this is just what mine naturally has turned into. I don't know what you guys are staring at.
Next question this week comes to us from the Jesse White Deer, who writes, are Manuel Cape and Matthias Nicholas fighting for number one contendership at 125 on this weekend's UFC card? Best wishes and warm regards from your pal from Oklahoma, the Jesse White Deer. Now, maybe this is as good a segue as we're going to get to talking about this weekend's fight night for a few minutes before we wrap up here. I think that, you know, maybe perhaps the one sticking point here for this fight being a number one contender fight is that Matthias Nicolau lost to Brandon Royval in his most recent fight by a first round KO in April of 2023. Prior to that, he had a 6-fight win streak going. So pretty good there. But I don't know. They are the co-main here. So maybe they're trying to position it as something important. Cape has a 4-fight win streak going. So I guess it, you know, maybe it's a number one contender fight for one guy.
I mean, it's number 5 versus number 6, though, right? Like, so I don't know if you can really make the jump all the way to number one just based on this. Better to win than to lose this one.
Yeah.
Could nudge somebody up a little bit, but I don't know if you can jump right to the top of the stack on this.
Well, who's in front of them if you got the rankings pulled up?
All right, right now, you know, you got Alexander Pantoja as champion. You got Brandon Moreno ranked number one. You got Amir Albazi number two. Don't forget about him. Yeah. Brandon Royval has dropped down to number 3, and then Kai Kara France at number 4.
Okay. So of that group, Albazi seems like you're like he's got the inside track, but you know, depending on what's going on with him, it could be a number one contender fight.
Might as well go ahead and win it and then see. That'd be my, if I was in your corner, either guy's corner, I'd be like, you know what? I can't tell you for sure. So this is a number one contender fight. I can't tell you for sure it's not. Why don't we win it though? Like, I think that that's the best course of action here. Let's just go out there, win it. You know what? Let's win it quick. And let's go home.
Maybe we get a bonus on top of that. Albazi is expected to face Brandon Moreno at UFC Fight Night 237 in February. So I'd argue that's probably your number one contender fight, especially if Albazi wins.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, so, I think so.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk a little bit about this weekend's fight night card before we get out of here. Now, this isn't a terrible fight night card, to be honest with you. You got Ankalaev versus Johnny Walker at the top of it. As we said at the beginning of the show, you got that flyweight co-main that is probably pretty good. You got Jim Miller on here, which is kind of interesting because it seems like a given that Jim Miller will fight at UFC 300.
Yeah. Right? Because, I think, hasn't Dana White even said that? Like, okay, we got to, for the plot, we got to have Jim Miller at UFC 300.
Yeah. In the same interview that he promised that UFC 300 would blow the tops of our heads clean off.
Okay.
Yeah. He also gave his word to the interviewer who asked if Jim Miller could be on the card. Dana White gave his word that Jim Miller would be on the card.
Solemn, unbreakable word.
Yeah, and he kind of has to be, right? If he's not on the card, that's a huge missed opportunity. And I assume Jim Miller is not above making a quick turnaround to come back in April, early April, and fight on UFC 300. But, you know, something could always happen in his fight against Gabriel Benitez, who comes in 2-4 in his last six. So you never know, but I just think that's odd. I think it's odd to not pull Jim Miller from this event if you were going to have him on UFC 300.
Yeah, that's a little bit strange. He is the betting favorite here. He's minus 120 going into this one, so that's interesting. Also, though, you gotta spare a moment to talk about the headlining the prelims of this thing. Andre Arlovsky versus Waldo Cortez Acosta. Andre Arlovsky is going to be doing this shit forever, man. You are going to have to drag Andre Arlovsky out of here. You told me, sitting here like 10 years ago even, you'd be like, who's going to be still just plugging along in the UFC heavyweight division? I don't know if I'd have said Andre Arlovsky. He's coming off of two straight losses here, but Andre Arlovsky, 44 years old, about to turn 45 in February, gentleman of a certain age, still going out here, still doing it. And still, you know, not an easy out. You can't look at Andre Arlovsky on the schedule and just go ahead and pencil in a W even now.
Yeah, from April of 2021 to April of 2022, Andre Arlovsky fought four times and they were all wins. Went 4-0. Of course, after that, he turned around and lost two straight, fighting only one time in 2022, or one other time in 2022, and one time in 2023. Four fights in a year for Andre Arlovsky, not that long ago. So yeah, I think you're right. I think we'll all be dead and gone, and Andre Arlovsky will be fighting on the, you know, the featured prelim of Fight Night 5002.
I do have to say, though, every time I go and I go to look up Andre Arlovsky's Wikipedia page, they did not have to do my man this way with the picture that they chose for his Wikipedia page. I just, you go look at it.
Yeah.
Somebody did this on purpose. They went and they chose, what's the one where Andre Arlovsky's badly broken nose looks fucking comedically awful? It looks like the picture is warped or something, and you're going to go ahead. After all this man has done in the sport, his many, many years of service, you're going to go in here and clown Andre Valerievich Arlovsky this way in his Wikipedia profile photo? No, someone must fix this. Somebody who knows more about the internet and can get in there and has Wikipedia editing privileges, get in there and fix this. But go. Why can't we get like a shot of like 2007 Andre Arlovsky, you know, where he got like the flowing locks and the fang mouthpiece, and the man was sexy. The man looked like a bank robber.
Who's to say he's not still? I mean,
okay, it's a different of him, kind of sexy now.
You get a picture of him where his nose is not taking a hard right turn. You know, have you ever seen Andre Arlovsky out of the cage? Guy walks around dressed like Ric Flair.
Exactly.
Most of the time. Let's get a picture of that instead of this one.
Looks like a just Eastern European hitman in a movie, and then you're going to go ahead and pick this shot where his nose is all fucked up because you're having a laugh. You're having a laugh at Andre Arlovsky's expense, and I don't like it.
No, nobody likes it. Better hope Andre Arlovsky doesn't see it. All right, let's talk about the main event just here for a few minutes. I think in Magomed Ankalaev and Johnny Walker, you had two guys that at certain points during their career looked like they were going to the top with a bullet. You had two guys where you're like, oh, this guy could be some trouble. This guy could be a future title contender. I think especially with Ankalaev, we thought, you know, he could be a future title contender, if not the champion.
Yeah.
And especially in a post-John Jones light heavyweight division. And Ankalaev, he's only 31 years old, so he's still got He's still got ample time to do it. But, you know, I feel like that hype train has cooled considerably on the heels of his split draw with Johnny Blackjacks and then this no contest with Johnny Walker. Previous to that, man, he had won 9 fights in a row, and which in the light heavyweight division, you win 9 fights in a row, you should already have been the champion for 3 fights.
Yes. So yeah, no, I mean, it is a reminder of how fast just things can kind of turn on you. And I don't want to say bad luck, because his own actions have played a role in this, but you're right that when they booked that fight between Ankalaev and Johnny Blackjacks for the vacant light heavyweight strap, it felt like, well, okay, we're trying to put the belt on Ankalaev, and yeah, this will be the way to do it. And then he goes out there and it's just kind of a lackluster performance, ends in that split draw, then the no contest against Johnny Walker, which, I mean, you did go and knee the guy in the head illegally. But you're right, before that, he's beaten a bunch of guys. He beat Nikita Krylov, beat Secret of the Ooze, Volkan Oezdemir, beat Thiago Santos, beat Anthony Smith. And then all of a sudden, it's just things have cooled, the momentum has halted. And now you got to do the same fight over with Johnny Walker, who I don't know if he ever had quite the same. He was a fun guy. He's a fun guy to have around. And we hope that he does not lose that fun guy-ness to have around. Like, remember when he went to TriStar and then came out very strategic, and we were like, no, we don't care for this at all. Yeah. We don't want to see you out here trying to win decisions and stuff, man. We want to see you freaking the fuck out. Win or lose, we want to see it just do some weird shit. We want to see a fight like the inflatable flappy arm guy outside the car wash. And if you do anything other than that, we're going to be disappointed. Hopefully we get that Johnny Walker back here again. And, you know, then it could be a little bit of find out what Ankalaev can really do.
Yeah. I appreciate that you referred to Volkan Oezdemir as the Secret of the Ooze, because I feel like when I first started calling him that, maybe there was some resistance. Maybe you didn't love it at first.
It grew on me. So
the fact that I've worn you down with that, I think makes me feel good. I would argue that, you know, when Johnny Walker came on the scene and he won 4 fights in a row, maybe we looked at him, we thought he was a title contender, because he was a big athletic guy with explosive abilities. And, you know, at that time, we were kind of scrounging around for contenders, for a guy who could give the champion a fight. And since then, it hasn't been great. I believe he went 1-4 in 5 fights and has since kind of put it back together with a little win streak before this no contest against Ankalaev. But it does seem, you know, like I think we both said, Ankalaev had a little bit of a higher ceiling. And so if he wins this one, you'd think he'd be right back on track in the somewhat muddled 205-pound division at this point.
Yeah.
All right, I think that's going to wrap it up this week. We're going to get out of here. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Join us over on the Patreon, if you would. We'll be there all week with Wednesday's live chat, Thursday's doing the damn thing, and Friday's power hour. It's great to be back for 2024. We appreciate all of you. As for right now, we are done. We are through. We are out.